uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
Oh, so much in the news today. Pat Robertson orders an execution. Yes, he knows who Jesus would assassinate. We'll get to that. One of our nation's religious leaders and former Republican candidates for President of the United States, suggesting the president of a sovereign nation, an ally of the United States, should be put to death. Is religious fundamentalism running amok, not just in the United States, but in Iraq as well? And well, it's not even a rhetorical question. The answer is yes, it is, it has. And it represents a very clear and present danger to, in particular, the women of Iraq. Speaking of that, we have with us live from the United Kingdom, Huzn Mahmoud. She is the head of the Organization of Women's Freedom in Iraq. Ms. Mahmoud, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you.
Thank you for being with us. You are Iraqi.
Yes, I am.
And what is the difference between right now, this point in time, the status of women in Iraq and the status of women, say, 3-4 years ago before the United States invaded Iraq?
Well, it's incomparable, although it's actually a very sad situation for me to compare now with what we have been suffering under Saddam's regime. But in reality, the situation now is very grim, and that you can see all these Islamic terrorist groups who are terrorizing women in Iraq and, you know, making them wear the veil and beheading them and so on. But also we have political Islamic groups who have been handpicked by the United States. And they're in the Iraqi so-called parliament. They also want to push for Islamic Sharia law, which is actually very disastrous for women in Iraq and for the whole society to imagine that we have to go back into the hundreds of years back where people, where the society was ruled by the religion. And this is actually very unfortunate, and it just could happen under the occupation. It's not something that our society is familiar with.
Huzan Mahmoud, you said that women are being beheaded in Iraq now?
Yes, by the Islamic groups.
By these fanatic religious right-wingers, essentially,
yeah.
As it were.
Yes.
Both Sunni and Shia.
Yeah, both.
Both of them.
Because for them, in order to to enforce their dark rules on Iraqi society, they are just they have to use arms and terror and violence in order for them to actually force people to listen to them, although people are not. And that's the consequences, as you see. Women are ending up being beheaded for not actually obeying their Islamic orders.
Now, I understand that there is a new phenomena in Baghdad of men driving about in cars and on motor scooters with jars of acid and throwing this acid in the face of women who are walking who are not veiled, or throwing it on the legs of women who are exposing their legs by wearing dresses?
Exactly. I mean, they are actually relying on all kind of inhumane, violent methods and sources to terrorize women, to actually force them into obeying their rules. But as you see, women are going out uncovered, and you can see the consequences again by founding this new method of throwing acid on their faces and on their legs to actually make them a kind of example for other women not to be so independent and to kind of bend them down for the Islamic rules.
Is this the same sort of thing that happened in Afghanistan over the last few years? I understand that the vast majority of women in Afghanistan are back in the burqa, or certainly under the veil now.
Exactly, because these Islamic terrorist groups are so brutal by nature that actually nothing is kind of preventing them from terrorizing and from carrying out suicide bombings, suicide attacks. It's just they have no respect for human life, for human dignity. So they are using human beings as bullets and as rockets, basically, to carry out attacks on civilian targets or on the American bases, for example, in Iraq.
We're talking with Huzan Mahmoud, who is the head of the Organization of Women's Freedom in Iraq, who is kind enough to speak with us from Europe today. You said in a few minutes ago that there are people in the Iraqi parliament who are advocates for, literally, for the faction that is driving around throwing acid in the faces of women who are not being veiled, who were handpicked by the United States. What did you mean by that?
Yes, these are the Islamic Shia groups, the United Alliance, who are basically now this somehow majority in the Iraqi so-called parliament. They are now pushing very hard for Sharia law to be the law of the state in Iraq. And by this, we will be forced into a lifestyle like the, people in Afghanistan where they lived under the Taliban regime or Saudi Arabia or Iran. I mean, this is the kind of lifestyle the handpicked groups in the parliament want us to live. And actually, people in Iraq, especially women, are being caught up between two, right-wing, harsh Islamist groups. Those who are in power, those who are in opposition, they both actually want to subordinate women into the Dark Ages, Islamic rules, and to oppress them and to violate their rights.
Why would the United States handpick or advocate for or support, for that matter, politicians in Iraq who want to eliminate the rights of women when in the United States, by and large, we're in favor of the rights of women? Is it because is it just political expediency, or does this have something to do with the Bush administration's general dislike for women's rights in the United States, or what?
Well, because in reality, in the very beginning, even prior to the occupation, the U.S. and U.K. governments, they have chosen or identified the political groups in Iraq who were in exile, such as Shia groups, Kurdish nationalists or tribalists and so on, and put them together. And they were put in the governing council, ruling council, then governing council, then the interim government, and now in the Iraqi parliament. They've been empowered. Because for them, it doesn't make any difference as long as their own interest is protected in Iraq, because the reality is, and everybody knows, that the war on Iraq had nothing to do with freedom and liberation for Iraqi people, or particularly for women. We actually see the opposite now for the last 2 years and a half. We've lost all simple, basic rights that we've had. If it was originally for those rights to be given to women, why we don't have them now, for example? Why we don't have any kind of so-called democracy even? What we see is that the democracy is being given to the Islamic political groups to actually violate our rights, to actually force us back into many centuries before, just under the name, oh, this is what Iraqi people want, this is our culture, this is, I don't know, whatever reason they bring. And it's not my culture to be veiled. It's not my culture to be subordinate. It's not my culture to be half-minded second-class citizen. No one in Iraq wants to be so much humiliated. They don't want to be degraded in this way. And it's all basically for causes that are not ours, and it has nothing to do with our aspirations for freedom and equality.
So you're suggesting that the majority of the people in Iraq actually do not support a theocratic government, an Iran-style government?
Surely.
Okay. And then why, if the majority of people in Iraq do not support the idea of women being subordinated in society, and for that matter, presumably the majority of people in Afghanistan don't support it, then how is it that it comes to be? How is it that these people...
The problem is because originally Iraqi people did not have or they were not given the chance to actually choose what they want, to actually know who are these political parties, what are their agendas. And as I said from right the beginning, they were divided on the basis of ethnic backgrounds, religious sects and tribals, and all these nationalistic views and right-wing issues. So now they have divided the society, and you have all these political groups in power, who have the media resources, who have all these financial sources, who have the power and so-called legitimacy for themselves to actually speak on behalf of Iraqi people.
So are you... I mean, excuse me.
Yes, so we have to understand really that what is going on the ground is very, very different from what people in the West, the image that they have.
So are you suggesting that before the elections were held, I mean, setting aside the issue of whether or not the elections themselves were rigged, because there's that's a very large and open question that Seymour Hersh has pretty much exposed that we rigged the elections. But in any case, even before the elections were held, because we, the United Kingdom and the United States, selected or played a large role in selecting who the candidates would be who would stand for office, that the outcome, no matter who got elected, was the outcome that we wanted because we picked out the initial candidates?
Yeah, that's true in a way, because it was all these political parties who have been in the beginning, we've seen them. They were installed in the ruling council, and then they changed the structure into governing council. And now it's the same people who are in the Iraqi parliament. If there were a fair democratic election, why we don't see any different faces? Because they have all these sources, as I said. They have all the media, all daily papers in their hands, all televisions, all radios, and they keep feeding into people's minds. Just vote for us, we are doing this for you, we are making your lives better. But actually they are just lying. They haven't even restored the most basic services, water supply, electricity. Millions of people are still homeless. I mean, imagine, internal homeless, displaced people because of the war, because of the occupation. And they don't care about them. These political parties, they are based in Green Zone, the Iraqi parliament. They just build up palaces for themselves, for their families. And they are actually very much involved in corruption. Millions of dollars is missing. And they keep accusing each other, and the whole society is starving. I mean, we are living in a country which is like the second richest country in the world for oil. And why people have to starve like this,
We're speaking with Huzan Mahmoud, the head of the Organization of Women's Freedom in Iraq. We have less than a minute left. What is the solution? What can we do?
The solution is for everybody, every single human being on this planet should actually stand up against the occupation and support the secular, progressive movements, women's movement, workers' movement, student movement in Iraq who are against the occupation and against the Islamism. That's the only solution. Otherwise, if the occupation goes on, if the Islamism goes on, the whole world will be in danger, not only Iraqi people, because you can see from the beginning of the occupation, terrorism rise up in the not only in Iraq, but elsewhere. We've seen the consequences in London just a few weeks ago. Mm. I mean, this occupation of Iraq have given a reason to the Islamic reactionary terrorist networks across the world to terrorize people, freedom-loving people in the West and inside Iraq and in the region, in the Middle East. So what we have to do is to build up a very progressive secular front worldwide in support of Iraqi secular people and against the Islamism and to end of the occupation.
Yeah, well said. And the website for that is equalityinirak.com. EqualityInIRAQ.com. Huzan Mahmoud, in the United Kingdom, the head of the Organization of Women's Freedom in Iraq, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
I much appreciate your bravery to speak out on these issues. It's the Tom Hartmann Program, 20 minutes past the hour.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartmann.
There's no other way to say it. We've been lied to and misled into another senseless war. How many thousands must lay dead before we wake up from this nightmare and revive the American dream? If we blindly stay the course, this horse will drown us in the stream. Let's take our heads out of the sand and open up our eyes. Let's take our heads out of the sand and finally realize that our tomorrow's where it depend on what we do today. Don't stay the course on a horse that's going the wrong way.
And welcome back. Defending America from the Conservative Weapons of Mass Deception. Helping you win the water cooler wars. I'm Tom Hartmann. Yes, don't stay the course on a horse that's heading the wrong way. George Bush, just a few minutes ago, I've walking by the newsroom here, and I saw that he was on CNN. He did a quick search on the web, and he says, New York Times reports, he says, Cindy Sheehan's group is suggesting a policy that would make America weak. Yes. Let's weaken America by sending all our jobs to China. Let's weaken America by destroying Social Security. Let's weaken America by giving huge tax breaks to billionaires and wiping out our economic base, making the middle class poorer by making the American dollar so weak that we're having 12% inflation, annual inflation rate right now. So everybody's getting a pay cut. Well, everybody except the millionaires and billionaires, the CEOs, the investor class, as the Wall Street Journal refers to their readers. Let's weaken America by starting a war in the Middle East with a country that did not attack us and incompetently bungling that war. And now, from The Independent, the newspaper in the UK, this morning, according to Kurdish and Sunni negotiators, the U.S. Ambassador Zalmay Khalilzad proposed that Islam be named a primary source for law in Iraq and supported a wording which would give clerics authority in civil matters such as divorce, marriage, and inheritance. Now, the world is buzzing about this. But I just did a quick search. Now, admittedly, not the most thorough. I'm doing this stuff on the fly here during breaks, but nonetheless, and maybe the folks in our chat room can come up with more. But I just did a quick search of American press, and I'm not finding any headlines like Bush supports fourth wife in Iraq. But that's the result. Here we have our ambassador, the ambassador from the United States, Zalmay Khalilzad, the ambassador to Iraq, saying that he supports Islam being named a primary source for law in Iraq and supporting a wording which will give clerics, mullahs, priests, the authority, well, they don't call them priests, but you know what I'm talking about, clerics, the authority in civil matters such as divorce, marriage, and inheritance. Now, what does this mean? Inequality, by the way, equalityiniraq.com is the website for Husan Mahmoud, the woman, or it's not her website, but she participates in that website, who is just our guest on the program. What does that mean? It means that men have the right to have four wives, up to four wives, as they do in many Islamic countries. The first time I visited the Middle East, we were visiting some friends of ours in Israel, and they were living in a home. They lived on the top floor, an apartment on the top floor of a large home that was owned by an Arab guy who was in his 60s, who had four wives. We spent several days there. We met all his wives. We met several of their children. His youngest wife was in her 20s. She had a new baby. His oldest wife was about his age, in the middle 60s. He had a wife in her 40s, or a wife in her early 50s, I'd say, and a wife in her late 30s. And they all lived together. They actually seemed to get along fairly well. You know, it's. But I'm not here to advocate polygamy. The point is that George Bush seems to be. The right to have four wives. The right to make divorce a male preserve. In other words, only men can determine whether or not there will be a divorce. Women have no say in it. Child custody, only to men. Women will not be allowed to have child custody. Isn't this extraordinary? 29 minutes past the hour.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Hey,
on the road again.
Indeed. Welcome back, my friends.
Now I locked my doors, the sun went down. Said goodbye to Boston town.
Oh, you tell him, Tom.
To Route 15, you take me on down through the New York scene. Hum another ties, it sure is pretty. Think about the women in New York City on the road again.
And welcome back, my friends. 27 minutes before the hour, that Tom Rush. Good old Tom Rush. Good man. And, in fact, he... back in the 15th anniversary, I think, of the Salem Children's Village, the community for abused kids that Louise and I started back in New Hampshire in long ago and far away, 1978. Tom played. He came and did a concert for us. So it was a good guy. And I've been listening to his music all my life, I think. All my adult life, anyway. Marvelous. So here we have the religious Reich, shall we say, rising up in the United States. They've got Bill Frist, you know, jumping like a spider on a thread, you know. Well, that old Jonathan Edwards, you know, the Lord holds you like a spider on a thread over the flames of hell. Right? I can just see, good old Bill Frist feeling like, you know, he's stem cells, creationism, stem cells, creationism. And it's got to be a tough one. It's got to be a tough one, being a Republican these days and holding public office. But now, not only in the United States, and by the way, in the United States, it is getting really and truly weird. Did you hear this, Pat Robertson, going on his rant here recently?
A coup that overthrew him, and what did the United States State Department do about it?
Now, the him we're talking about here is Hugo Chavez, the president, the elected, several times elected, president of Venezuela, who was overthrown in a coup sponsored by the United States, or so the reports indicate, and the people came out on the streets demanding that he come back. And we didn't go down and bomb the people, and so he came back.
Virtually nothing. And as a result, within about 48 hours, that coup was broken. Chavez was back in power. But we had a chance to move in. He has destroyed the Venezuelan economy, and he's going to make that a launching pad for communist infiltration and Muslim extremism all over the continent.
Now, you get this now. The communist part of it, what he's talking about is the fact that Hugo Chavez said, hey, the oil companies, they don't own the oil here in Venezuela anymore. Sorry, guys, this oil belongs to the people of Venezuela. And so he's taken the money from that oil because he when he came to power, he had a country that had been run by oligarchs for centuries by a small number of very rich families. And he came to power and said, what are we going to do? We got all these barrios, all these slums, all these hungry people. Let's feed them. So they built government-run supermarkets. And you know, you listen to this program regularly, you know I'm not in favor of government-run businesses. But what do you do when you've got starving people? Government-run supermarkets with very reduced prices, subsidized prices on food, so that poor people could eat, paid for with the revenue from oil. Government-run health care, paid for with revenue from oil. Oh, well, Pat Robertson, that's communism. Well, and in some small way, it is a step in that direction. But I don't think it's over the line. It's a transitional thing. Chavez says he's trying to create a new socialism for the 21st century. Time will tell. It's an experiment. But it's an experiment that, Mr. Robertson, that has to do with feeding the hungry, clothing the naked, putting shelter over those who are homeless. Seems to me that somebody else used to talk about... Oh, yeah, Jesus. He used to talk about that. So who would Jesus assassinate, do you think?
You know, I don't know about this doctrine of assassination, but if he thinks we're trying to assassinate him, I think we really ought to go ahead and do it. It's a whole lot cheaper than starting a war. And I don't think any oil shipments will stop, but this man is a terrific danger. This is in our sphere of influence, so we can't let this happen.
Now, keep in mind, this is a guy who is a partner in a diamond mine with the former ruler of Liberia, Charles Taylor. Right? You know, the blood diamonds of Africa. I mean, this is just absolutely bizarre.
We have the Monroe Doctrine. We have other doctrines that we have announced. And without question, this is a dangerous enemy to our South, controlling a huge pool of oil that could hurt us very badly.
Ah, there we go. Now we get it's got nothing to do with who Jesus would assassinate. It has to do with a huge pool of oil that could hurt us very bad. Well, Mr. Robertson, why don't we just change our corporate average fuel efficiency standards? Why don't we eliminate the deduction or the exemption that light trucks and heavy SUVs like Hummers have, so that they're not even considered under the CAFE standard? Why don't we throw everything into that pot and say, you know, we're going to have decent fleet efficiency in the United States? and you know, and then say to Venezuela, you know, we don't need your oil. And then who cares what he does? Who cares what he does?
We have the ability to take him out, and I think the time has come that we exercise that ability. We don't need another $200 billion war.
Well, I'll go along with the we don't need another $200 billion war, but it's $300 billion now, by the way.
To get rid of one, you know, strong-armed dictator, it's a whole lot easier to have some of the covert operatives do the job and then get it over with.
Yeah, well, where were you when George Bush was talking about this, Mr. Robertson? Pat Robertson, of course, Pat Robertson, the guy that that God talks to.
American stock market is going to surge upward, if I heard from the Lord. And again, ladies and gentlemen, don't go out and buy stock on my recommendation, but that's what I feel in my heart. The Lord was saying it's going to be a super good year. Well, the Lord has some very encouraging news for George Bush. You know, some years ago, as I was praying, the Lord made it clear that Ronald Reagan's second term was going to be filled with scandal and problems. And lo and behold, it happened that way. And to my sorrow.
So you're a prophet. Okay, we get it. You're a prophet. Your prophecy. You gave a prophecy once. I mean, Jeannie Dixon did this once, too, I know. Anyhow, you gave a prophecy once, and it turned out true. Ronald Reagan's presidency would be covered with scandal. It might have been the fact that he'd been in office for 4 years and everybody could tell that he had a bunch of criminals working for him. But nonetheless, you observed it, pointed it out, and so you're a prophet. So what did God tell you?
But what I heard was that Bush is now positioned to have victory after victory, and that his second term is going to be one of triumph, which is pretty strong stuff.
Wow, I guess.
But that he'll have Social Security reform passed, that he'll have tax reform passed. I will remove judges from the Supreme Court quickly, and their successors will refuse to sanction the attacks on religious faith.
Wow. God is in favor of tax cuts. He's in favor of privatizing Social Security. And God wants to make sure that the people on the Supreme Court, that he's going to kill off some of the Supreme Court folks and change things. Whew, boy, aren't you reassured? So at the same time, we've got the right-wingers rising in America and, you know, using 9/11 saying, you know, it's our fault. Right. Well, actually, it's not our fault. It's the fault of those pagans, those homosexuals, those terrible gays who want to get married. It's their fault that 9/11 happened, says Jerry Falwell and Pat Robertson, the American Taliban.
And I really believe that the pagans and the abortionists and the feminists and the gays and the lesbians who are actively trying to make that an alternative lifestyle, the ACLU, People for the American Way, all of them who tried to secularize America, I point the thing in their face and say, you helped this happen.
Now, this, keep in mind, was 2 days after 9/11. Pat Robertson replies.
Well, I totally concur. And the problem is we have adopted that agenda at the highest levels of our government, and so we're responsible as a free society for what the top people do. And the top people, of course, the court system.
Oh, yeah. Another one of those kill the judges thing. And Falwell and Robertson agreeing that actually, you know, we deserve 9/11. I mean, how dare we allow women to have rights in America?
What we saw on Tuesday, as terrible as it is, could be minuscule if, in fact, God continues to lift the curtain and allow the enemies of America to give us probably what we deserve.
Well, Gary, that's my feeling. I think we've just seen the antechamber to terror. We haven't even begun to see what they can do to the major population.
You talk about the antechamber to terror. The religious Reich in the United States is talking right now about wanting to control the lives of women. They want to make birth control illegal, the morning after pill, which is not an abortion pill. It's a contraception pill. They want to make that illegal. They've got this whole movement of pharmacists who will refuse to prescribe it. This is the beginning. This is the beginning of rolling back the Griswold versus the State of Connecticut 1964, as I recall, case that decriminalized birth control nationwide. And, you know, it's not just about abortion, trust me. This is about the position of women in society. the role of women in society. It's about power. This, plain and simple, it's about power. It's about men versus women and men having the power. And at the same time, we're seeing the exact same thing happen in Iraq. Coincidence or conspiracy? In March of this year, followers of the Shia cleric Muqtada al-Sadr targeted an outing of students from Basra University playing football and listening to music. The mixed group was attacked in Basra Public Park. One male student was killed trying to defend his female friends against Islamists who literally tore the women's clothes off their bodies. Sadr's men photographed the disheveled, half-dressed women and told them their parents would receive the photos if they didn't refrain in the future from immoral behavior. Immoral behavior. More widely, professional women have been deliberately targeted and killed, notably in the city of Mosul, and recently anti-woman Islamists in Baghdad have taken to throwing acid in women's faces and on their uncovered legs. So-called honor killings are now rife in Iraq, as is the kidnapping and rape of women. Beheadings are occurring, and women are being sold into sexual servitude. Our guest, this is from an article that Huzan Mahmoud, who was our guest at the beginning of this program, equalityiniraq.com, from an article she wrote in this week's The Independent of London. She said, when I was in Baghdad a few months ago, I couldn't go anywhere without a bodyguard. The sense of danger and threat was tangible. She says, Islamist repression against women is a campaign of moral terror. Oh, moralism, that's their word. Leaflets, graffiti, and verbal warnings in their thousands warn women against going out unveiled, against putting on makeup, against shaking hands or mixing with men. Female doctors are being prevented from treating male patients. Male doctors warn not to attend to women. They wanted right into the Constitution that the clerics have the right to make all the rules when it comes to the relationships between women and men and women and society. The right of men to have four wives, to make divorce a male preserve, custody of children for men only. Even women, she notes, in Iraq's National Assembly, the country's parliament, have called for resolutions to allow for the beating of women by their guardians, male relatives such as husbands or fathers. This, the outcome of our war on Iraq and Iraq's people. This, the noble cause for which Casey Sheehan died. I'm telling you, it's happening all over the place. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Richard in a truck. Hey, Richard, what's up?
How are you? Which I shouldn't have said.
Anyway, it's quite all right. I'm great, but I'll get better. What's up, Richard?
All right, the ideology that's expressed by Pat Robertson and Jerry Falwell, I don't find any difference between that ideology and what Bush says about fundamentalists who hate our freedom.
That's, I think you're making my point.
Yeah,
I agree
yeah.
with you.
The other thing is assassination, state-sponsored assassination of leaders who were duly democratically elected. All we have to do is look at what happened in Iran when the Shah was put into power. And the whole reason back then was just what Robertson was talking about, oil.
Yeah, we overthrew an elected government. We overthrew an elected government in Iraq to install Saddam Hussein.
Precisely.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's just how strange it is. Richard, I gotta move along, but thank you for the call. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number. Jim in Pittsburgh on the line. Hey, Jim, what's up?
Hey, sir, I listened to you ever since you started in Pittsburgh, and I thoroughly enjoy your program and your hard work and all your presentations. However, here's the other shoe.
There you go.
I'm outside working. I have a plug in my ear from my transistor. And towards the end of your program, you were saying that various countries had not used the military to suppress people, et cetera. And you brought up the British in Ireland. And really, there's more British soldiers in Northern Ireland right now than there are in Iraq.
Oh, I know. What I said, actually, if you go back and you can get the archive of it from White Rose Society, what I said was when the British did use their military, I corrected myself. You're right. I did say that. And then I said, but actually, the British did use their army in Northern Ireland. And when they used their army aggressively in Northern Ireland, and I actually drove through Dublin with my family about 10 years ago, and we had a half-track follow us with a machine gun. when the British used their army aggressively in Dublin, it made things worse.
Yes,
and everybody acknowledges that. You don't the military, I mean, you may have to have, you know, some policing function like they did in Dublin, or arguably. I mean, that's something you can still debate. But the armies are designed to kill people and break things. And that's not how you bring about democracy.
And the other part of that, and I think it's something that you might want to consider, the British have very often been very good at talking. They have to also listen.
Yeah, yeah.
There you Thank you.
Yep. Yep. Well said, Jim. You got to listen. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. So what are we going to do? I think it's really important that we be standing up and saying no to the Bush administration. We did not pay $300 billion and 2,000 lives for an Islamist government in Iraq. 10 minutes before the hour.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
Now, wiping out the terrorists, that's fine by me. But please don't erode our civil liberties. The America we fight for and hold so dear includes a woman's right to choose, freedom of religion, freedom of assembly, and free speech like the song I'm singing here.
Yeah, except that, you know, the right-wingers in the Bush administration and the right-wingers in Iraq just really don't want it that way. Welcome back to our program. This hour brought to you by Motor Silk, evergreenamerica.com, their website, 1-866-LESS-FUEL, their telephone number. I use this stuff in my car, and we're actually tracking the increase in gas mileage that we're getting from it, and it's not insignificant. Check it out. It's worth checking out. 1-866-LESS-FUEL for Motor Silk. Welcome back to our program. Jeff in Cincinnati, Ohio on the line. Hey, Jeff, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. Talking about terrorism and insurgencies and stuff throughout human history. In 1946, Churchill stood in the House of Commons and called these people a bunch of murderous thugs and terrorists that killed 91 British civilians, half of them women and children, by blowing up a hotel. The name of the group was the Stern Gang. Their leader was Menachem Begin.
Yeah, you're talking about, yeah.
Terrorism works.
Well, there's the old saying, you know, one man's terrorist is another man's freedom fighter. I mean, it's and there's some unfortunate reality to that. But the point is not, you know, in my mind right now, the point is not about terrorism or not terrorism. It's about terrorism against women that we're seeing in the United States by the religious Reich and in Iraq by the religious Reich. And it's the same thing, in my opinion. Greg in New York, Pennsylvania on the line. Hey, Greg, what's up?
Tom, first time caller here. Just wanted to comment on the Pat Robertson, Jerry Falwell information that you had spoken about. I lived in Virginia Beach for a while, and let me tell you something. Pat Robertson, that SOB had a stranglehold on that city.
Sure.
His beliefs. Everybody around me was just a knucklehead, conservative, right-wing freak, and I just could not get my point across. The town there was terrible.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've ever been down in that area, but
you know, I have been through there, but I've never talked politics with anybody through there. But you know, he's a powerhouse. He's an economic powerhouse. He's a political powerhouse. The guy, you know, launched a run for the Republican nomination for president of the United States from that base. So it's not anything that you can easily ignore, Greg. It's very real. Pat Robertson and Jerry Falwell and all of these guys. They've got, you know, now Tony, what's his name? You know, the guy Tony Perkins, is it? With the Family Research Council. I mean, it's just, you know, it's the cavalcade of right-wing stars. Thank you very much for the call, by the way, Greg. Good to hear from you. And they're competing for power. I mean, you look at the history of the early United States, it was the same thing, except back during the Revolutionary era, it was the Congregationalists versus the Episcopalians, you know, fighting for power. And they were all worried about the Unitarians and the Deists. You know, it's heaven forbid, you know, and the secular, they want to create a nation that doesn't have an official religion. What? But that's what we did. That's what we did. And that's what Iraq has to do if they want to save that country.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded? Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live coast to coast, border to border on radio stations from coast to coast, on Sirius Satellite Radio, on CRN Digital, on WhiteRoseSociety.org, RadioPower.org, podcasting at Apple's iTunes. Welcome back to our program. Our toll-free number across the United States, 1-866-889-8894. Outside the United States, 503-248-0620. This last weekend, transcript for August 21st on Meet the Press with Tim Russert, filling in Mr. David Gregory, and Mr. Gerecht, Ruel Mark Gerecht was on, a right-wing spokesman for the administration. He says they're talking about women's rights and freedom in Iraq, right? And Gregory says, Mr. Gerecht, the consequences of this, and that, you know, the possibility that women will lose their vote, they will become the property of their husbands, that they will be, it'll be legal to beat women as long as you are a direct blood relative, that husbands can have up to four wives, that divorce will be the sole province of men, and women will not be allowed to petition for divorce and will have no say in whether or not a divorce happens, that women are the property of men, that they have no social or political or legal rights. He says, what about the consequences of this, Mr. Gerecht? Actually, I'm not terribly worried about this. I mean, one hopes that the Iraqis protect women's social rights as much as possible. It certainly seems clear that in protecting the political rights, there's no discussion of women not having the right to vote. No, not yet. He says, I think it's important to remember that in the year 1900, for example, in the United States, it was a democracy then. Actually, if you go back and you look at the literature on democracy, and this is fascinating stuff. I wrote it, there's an entire chapter about this in my book, What Would Jefferson Do? You know, what is a democracy? When is a democracy formed? You can't really call a country a democracy if half its people can't vote. So arguably, the United States did not become a democracy Until what was it, 1920, I believe? The year that women got the right to vote in the United States? So anyhow, he says, I think it's important to remember that in the year 1900, for example, in the United States, it was a democracy then. In 1900, women did not have the right to vote. If Iraqis could develop a democracy that resembled America in the 1900s, I think we'd all be thrilled. We would? Now, wait a minute. Let's just, you know, understand this very clearly. Here's a country, Iraq, a country where women had full equality with men. Now, you know, part of that was that neither men nor women had political rights. Nobody could stand up and speak out against Saddam Hussein. It's, you know, one of those common characteristics of dictatorships. You find it in, like 100 countries around the world. I mean, try it in China, our main trading partner. Stand up and speak out against the Chinese government. You're toast. You're dead. Or you're in prison for the rest of your life. So, yeah, Saddam Hussein, China. There's a lot of dictatorships around the world where people don't have political rights. But social rights, different thing. And in among the Arab countries, among the Muslim countries of the Middle East, Iraq was one of the most progressive when it came to women's rights. This is just absolutely incredible to me, by the way, how few people realize this. It's another commentary on the tragedy of American media, where we talk to death about a missing white girl in Aruba. We don't talk about the missing black girls in, or women in St. Thomas, for example. But we talk about this missing white girl in Aruba, you know, to death. Why? Because it gets good ratings. We have news that's ratings-driven rather than news-value-driven. Is it important that we know about genocide? Apparently not. It doesn't draw good ratings. People don't like to look at those pictures of starving people in Darfur. So don't put it on the air. That's the decisions that the media companies have made. They just don't talk about it. Similarly, they don't talk about what Iraq was like before the Gulf War in 1991, when Iraq was our ally. And that women all were entitled to free public education and took advantage of it. That women didn't wear the veil. That women could be in the professions. That, you know, outside of the political realm where neither men nor women had freedom in Iraq. A tight lid was kept on the religious fanatics like El Sadr. We called it repression, remember? Oh, he's repressing those Shia. A tight lid was kept on the religious fanatics because it was a secular society. And women had rights and could participate in government, or participate in civil society, not in government. Well, actually, there were women working in government as well. And again, this is not, I'm not singing the praises of Saddam Hussein here. He was a murderous thug. As are the leaders, in my opinion, of China and of Burma. And the list goes on and on. You know, I mean, there's no shortage of murderous thugs out there. Mugabe in Zimbabwe. I mean, there's a lot of them. But we're not talking about bringing a country up to the standards of 1900s America. You know, I would agree with this loony, this Grecht guy, if we were going into a country where, you know, women had zero rights, and we were bringing them up to the point where they had some rights, like in the United States in 1900. But he's talking about taking a country that was one of the most advanced in the United States, in the Middle East, and dragging them down. This is the part I started to say a few minutes ago. This is just so incredible to me. This woman, this blonde talking head, I forget her name. She's an Ann Coulter wannabe. She's on Fox News a lot. And she was on one of the talk shows over the last couple of days debating this whole thing in Iraq and women's rights and whatnot. And she goes, well, before we invaded, women were all in burqas. And I'm watching this. You know, here's this, you know, spokesperson for the Reich, right? For the Bush administration. And she's saying, before we invaded Iraq, the women were all in burqas. And I'm wondering, is this the new lie that they want us to believe? You know, like the last lie, that 9/11 and Saddam had something to do with each other. I mean, Bush is still out selling that one. Just again yesterday. Or is this woman truly that badly misinformed? The women were in burqas in Afghanistan when we invaded, and they're in burqas again in Afghanistan, by the way. But not in Iraq. Not at all. It was a very modern society. So anyhow, this guy, he goes on to say this on the Sunday program. He says, I mean, women's social rights are not critical to the evolution of democracy. What? To say half your population has no social rights and that doesn't have anything to do with democracy? Well, now you know. You know, the right-wing talking points. I guarantee you, this is going to be the thing. They're going to be out there beating this drum. And what's so bizarre about it is that the so-called Christian Reich here in the United States is going to be bouncing off this. You're going to see more of the Falwells and Robertsons and Tony Perkins and all these guys. You're going to see all these guys out there going,
oh, yes, a husband should be the head of the family. The woman should be barefoot, pregnant, and in the home. In the home, yeah. No, not in the Humvee, in the home. And I don't know, women going to college, I'm not such a good idea. No.
And you're going to see, you know, women in the workplace. I mean, here we have Judge Roberts, right? John Roberts wants to be U.S. Supreme Court Justice. And what does he say about equal pay for women? He says it's an absurd idea. An absurd idea! You think the Taliban is not trying to take over the United States? It's just a different religion. It's the same old Taliban. And I quote, I mean, women's social rights are not critical to the evolution of democracy. We hope they're there. I think they will be there, but I think we need to put this into perspective. Right. Right. I mean, this is just an absolute stunning, mind-boggling tragedy. Our quote for the day, by the way, from George Washington. Labor to keep alive in your breast that little spark of celestial fire called conscience. A quote for the day for George W. Bush. Labor to keep alive in your breast that little spark of celestial fire called conscience. George Washington, President of the United States, first President of the United States, commander of the Continental Army, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And oops, he said a nasty word. Yes, in fact, there is a radio station down in Kentucky, in Lexington, Kentucky, where the manager of the station, a guy by the name of Tom Goodell, told the Lexington Herald Leader that WUKY, the public radio station, had been tracking Garrison Keillor's Writer's Almanac content for a year because he knew something was going to come up. This guy is a Democrat. He's going to say a dirty word. And sure enough, on July 23rd, Garrison Keillor, on his Writer's Almanac program carried on public radio stations all around the country, read the poem by Edward Field called Curse of the Catwoman, which uses the word breast. And so WUKY pulled Garrison Keillor off the air. Yes, indeed, folks. Lexington, Kentucky is now free from the dangerous influence of Mr. Prairie Home Companion, Garrison Keillor. Aren't you pleased? Nothing more to worry about. Everything's fine. You don't have a job in Lexington? No, they're all in China. You don't have civil liberties? No. FBI's listening into your phone. The police can knock and bang into your house. Sneak and peek searches. It's all just fine. You don't have civil liberties. You're losing. The Supreme Court is going to say women won't have the right, not just to abortion, equal pay. But Garrison Keillor's gone. 20 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
I am a citizen of the planet. I was born here. I'm going to die here.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. Kellyanne Conway. Sure enough, one of the folks in the chat room, hey, was that woman that you were talking about who was saying that when we invaded Iraq, the women were in burqas? Kellyanne Conway. Yes, it was. Hopelessly clueless Kellyanne Conway. Or part of the new right-wing spin. And I am inclined to suspect, since they corrected her on the program and she's still clung to that lie, that she's part of the new right-wing spin, which is that they're going to say that the women used to be in burqas in Iraq. They're going to try and reinvent history. Greg Gorman is with us with the Talk Radio News Service. Hey, Greg, what's up?
Well, speaking of women, I just heard what you said. And speaking of women, this afternoon the president is in Idaho, and he made a comment. Someone asked him, a reporter asked him, if the new Iraqi constitution is really going to support women's rights, if it's based in Islam, and he said that he spoke to Condoleezza Rice, he being the president, and that the way he understands it is that women do have rights in the new constitution, inherent rights, and that it does not talk about the religion, it talks about a religion. But my understanding and my reading of this is that I'm not even sure the president knows what's in the Iraqi constitution. He's sort of taking word from someone else, and I'm not even sure he's even been talking about it or thinking about it while he's in Idaho fishing and skiing and, or, you know, whatever.
Mountain bike riding, yeah.
Mountain bike riding, yeah. With the governor.
His new hobby.
His new favorite thing,
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. It's, and... Yeah, in fact, actually, the reality is that none of us know what's in the new Constitution, because the new Constitution isn't finished yet. They still have three more days.
Exactly. Three more days, and of course, we all know, or we all, I'm assuming that it is going to be written, you know, under the guise of it's an Islamic country, therefore it's an Islamic document, and of course, women's rights are an issue. People are asking the president about this, and of course, he doesn't have anything to say, because, like you just said, Tom, he just doesn't know.
But our ambassador just said, and you, an ambassador can't say this without permission. I mean, you've got to have, they have to have the authority to say this. This is from the Independent in the UK, from the newspaper. And why this is not splashed on the front pages of newspapers across America is beyond me, Greg. Maybe you can figure it out. But anyhow, here's a quote from the Independent this morning. According to Kurdish and Sunni negotiators, the U.S. Ambassador Zalmay Khalilzad proposed that Islam be named a primary source and supported a wording which would give clerics authority in civil matters such as divorce, marriage, and inheritance. In other words, men will have the right to beat their wives again. They will have a man can have up to four wives again. Women will not be able to ask for divorce. Women will not be able to contest a divorce if a man asks for the divorce. They will not have rights, for example, to walk around without a burqa or a veil on. These civil matters, they're going to lose their civil rights.
Well, and of course, this is what I think we in the press are trying to get at when we have a chance to speak to the president, like the travel pool did today in Idaho, asking him if the president makes a statement like there are women's rights in this constitution and yet he doesn't have all the facts behind it, how can he say something like that, he being the president, he being a voice that we all listen to in the press, if he says something we try to pay attention, how can he say this, Tom? What you're saying is exactly right. We don't know, and if the ambassador is saying that women's rights are not going to be represented because it will be based on Islamic law code and we know that women do not have equal rights, then how can this entire war process, how can the Iraqi war be for equality in Iraq when it comes to an end and when this constitution is finally written and all three parties, the Kurds and the Sunnis, and everyone agrees on this constitution, if women do not have equal rights, I believe we're going to see a complete scandal because the president will no longer be able to say that what we've been fighting for is equality for Iraqis.
Here's the ultimate irony, Greg. I believe, I may be wrong on this, but I believe that Thursday in the United States is National Women's Equal Rights Day. And Thursday is the day that the new constitution is supposed to come back from Iraq without women's rights.
Well, that's an irony that won't be lost on a lot of people. I'm glad you pointed it out because I do think you're right. This is a bigger story. I don't know why it's not splashed across every newspaper in the country.
It is in Europe.
That's right.
It is. I spent this morning, and the folks in our chat room telling me about it here, I spent this morning going through some of the European papers, and they are flipped out about it. It's just not being covered here in the United States. That our ambassador is not only going along with us, he's actually promoting it to get this constitution moving. It's incredible. Greg Gorman with the Talk Radio News Service. Thanks, Greg.
Always good to be with you, Tom.
Good to be with you, too. Have a great one. It's 29 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Crimson flames tap through my ears, going high and mighty trap. Countless fire and flaming rope, using ideas as my maps.
And welcome back.
Feet on edges, soon said I. Proud, neat, heated brow. I was so much older.
One can hope. Welcome back. 27 minutes before the hour. I'm Tom Hartman. This is the place where our talking points come from, Madison and Jefferson, not some right-wing cranky think tank. It's the True People's Radio, the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Our program today brought to you by Small Dog Electronics, 1-800-511-MAX, 511-MACS, where you can get the latest iPods right now. And plus, anything computer. Anything from products to service to help, whatever you may need, give them a shout. 1-800-511-MACS and tell them Tom Hartman told you to call. Say hi for us. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, TomHartman.com, if you want to drop into our live chat room. Jason in Michigan is on the line. Hey, Jason, what's on your mind today?
Yeah, hey, how's it going?
Great.
This is really an amazing day in this whole Iraq thing, you know, with the Constitution coming up. But I, just to get to the point, these guys are on the hard right, and I not, you know, I just want to make sure that people understand just exactly what I'm saying. The hard right. Think that their supporters, their followers are stupid. I mean, they really literally do. Because anytime all the stuff that's going on over there, over here, and then the rhetoric that, you know, they keep spinning day after day, and these people believe it.
Yeah.
I mean, these people, they've got to be right.
Here's the good news for you, Jason. More and more people are not believing it. I mean, look at what's happening to Bush's approval numbers. I mean, they're absolutely in the tank. He is worse right now in the polls than Richard Nixon was during the height of Watergate when Nixon was exposed as a criminal who tried to subvert the United States Constitution.
Yeah, and I don't particularly like Alan Combs, but I was listening just for a few minutes last night, and there was a guy that came on, and he was obviously right-winger, and he was saying that Alan didn't have his facts straight. And so Alan kept asking him, you know, what facts are we discussing here? You know, what facts exactly are you talking about?
Right.
And he couldn't say it. And he says, well, his comeback, his, you know, final ultimate comeback was, well, nobody has the facts.
Yeah, right.
And I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
So this is what these guys are operating off of.
This is the official spin of the Reich.
I'll tell
you, you know, yeah, yeah.
So I was through after that. But, you know, this whole thing is like just a tragedy, you know, just of epic proportions. And it's just unfolding slowly by the day, and it's just painful to watch.
It is. It really and truly is. And imagine the pain that those families are experiencing who have loved ones who are over there, whether they have died there, whether they've been wounded there, or whether they're simply there and their families back here know that they're over there being exposed to God only knows what diseases, not to mention depleted uranium, you know, not to mention the risk from day to day. I mean, I just can't imagine how difficult it must be to have a family member there in Iraq. It's just... It truly makes
and,
me...
And not just that, but the Iraqi people themselves, I mean, they didn't deserve this. They didn't ask for this.
Yeah.
And we've got to do something.
Yeah.
You know, something's got to happen. And, you know, we've got a chance next year. If it doesn't happen, then, you know, only God knows what will happen.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Thanks a lot, Jason. We've got a chance at the ballot box next year, absolutely, in November of 2006, which means getting ready right now. I mean, you know, the primaries are coming up, right? People, so start paying attention to what's going on. Now, here we are in Iraq. Now, of course, this is a war that, you know, folks say, well, it's because of oil. You know, we went over there for oil. No, I'm sorry. It's not about oil. That's not why we went there. It's why broadly we're in the Middle East. I mean, obviously, you know, there's no oil in southeastern Africa, so we're not in Zimbabwe. You got, you got Charles Taylor with his diamonds over in Liberia, so we had to protect that because his business partner, Pat Robertson, was a little concerned about it. But, no, there's oil in the Middle East, so we're messing in Middle East politics. We have been for a century, pretty much, more or less. Three quarters of a century, anyway, easily. Well, going back to World War One, back to when the Ottoman Empire split up, you know, there were three states that were part of the Ottoman Empire, and the British said, well, let's just merge these three states and make them into one country that will be friendly to us. Right? This is back in the let's make Arabia safe for the United Kingdom days. And so the British created a country called Iraq out of three separate states, which we now call the Shia South, the Sunni Center, and the Kurdish North. And you know, we can see how it worked out. I think, frankly, the easy thing to do right now is to avoid the civil war. Is to simply say, okay, it's three countries, and we're out of here, and you guys sort it out. And we will give you aid and support and help if you're going to do an egalitarian democratic fashion government, and if you're going to go down the right-wing road like they did in Afghanistan and like they're trying to do in Iran, and they did for a while in Iran, and you know, the thing, frankly, that is slowing down democracy, the pro-democracy movement in Iran, which almost had reached a tipping point about 4 years ago, is the fact that we started attacking Iran, which gave the mullahs all that much more power. And you got to wonder, you know, what does George Bush want? Does he want there to be stability in the world, or does he want there to be instability? It seems that he wants instability because it gives him more political power. Which is a terribly cynical thing to say, but I can't come up with another explanation. So anyway, we say to each one of these three countries, you know, here's a carrot, here's a stick. The stick isn't, you know, we're not going to invade you. It's not a big stick, but, you know, there's some carrots for you if you're going to do it our way. And if you're not, then, you know, good luck. You're on your own. And get out. Because we have become more of an irritation than a help. Armies are designed to kill people and break things. Ask anybody in the military. That's what armies do. And there are times when it's really important to have an army around that can kill people and break things. But those times are few and far between, and appropriately so. And you cannot expect an army to put together a nation or put together democracy. It's not their mission. Somebody tell George W., please. Jeff in Boulder, Colorado. Well, from Boulder, Colorado, in Crawford, Texas, or the outlying regions, calling in. Hey, Jeff, what's up?
Hey, Tom, just some really quick updates on what's going on, and then I have just a very brief message to give you. Last night we had Sheila Jackson Lee, representative there, meeting with the group and talking with people, as well as Joan Baez. Cindy should be back tomorrow in Crawford, and at the end of the month, on the 31st, they will start a bus tour. Three buses will be leaving Crawford. They'll be traveling through the United States with the destination ending up in Washington, D.C. And so if people were to check the Gold Star Families for Peace website, I believe that they're going to show the routes on there so that people can actually meet with these families if they want to. They'll be going through the United States.
Great.
Here, Tom, I have to say this. I was talking with the families and really trying to get what is the message? What are we trying to do here? And this is, I think, one of the most critical things that is happening in our country right now, in this country's history, because they have touched the raw nerve that may be one of the most important civil rights issues in our country's history. And this really isn't about Cindy. It's not about George Bush or Cheney or Rumsfeld, Iraq. It's not about conservative or liberal. What this is about is, do we have the rights as citizens to ask the president for an accounting? Do we, the people, have the right to ask that, or is the president only responsible to his corporate sponsors? Who is the president responsible to? So if Bush decided, or any president decided, that they wanted to start dropping bombs on Venezuela because Venezuela was a threat for some reason, do we have the right to question that? This is the citizens' rights movement.
Yeah, absolutely. And here's the meme. Here's the key. Here's the frame. We don't elect leaders. We elect representatives. It's very simple. The leaders in the United States are us. The first three words of the Constitution of the United States are we the people. We the people of the United States. And we the people are the leaders. We elect representatives. The president is our representative to the world. The president and the vice president is our representative. Our members of Congress are our representatives. Our senators are our representatives. And when they stop representing us and try and tell us that what they're doing is leading, then it's time for us to say, sorry, guys, leadership may be a wonderful attribute in corporate America or in kingdoms or in fiefdoms or in feudal worlds or whatever. But in governance, we want representatives. We want you to be representing the people, the interests of the people.
Yes. This is very big, and it's what these people are so afraid of right now because it threatens their very power.
These people being the Bushies.
The people in government. And it shouldn't be an issue. It's not a partisan issue, because in another few years, maybe there's a Democrat in there. And is he responsible to the people, or is he responsible to his corporate?
Well, it's the same thing. I mean, Bill Clinton was not acting in the interest of we the people when he signed NAFTA, or when he signed GATT and created the World Trade Organization, or when he signed the Telecommunications Act of 1996. He was definitely not acting in the interest of we the people in those and many other situations where actually he was acting in the interest of corporate sponsors and the people who would get him reelected. And that's where the Democrats went wrong. The whole DLC, Democratic Leadership Council, the whole DLC betrayal of the Democratic Party, Democratic principles, and the historic principles of Republican democracy in the United States, which is ongoing, by the way, with these DLC folks like Evan Bayh and Hillary Clinton and whatnot, are, in my opinion, not only ruining America, they're destroying the Democratic Party. And it's a sad thing. But in any case, yes, good point, Jeff. Thank you for the call and the report.
Thanks.
Appreciate it. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number. Jim in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania on the line. Hey, Jim, what's up?
I just heard on the news that we're subsidizing Iraqi oil for their use in Iraq.
That's right. If you're a terrorist in Iraq and you want to fill up your tank, you can buy oil for about 20 cents a gallon.
Yeah, and Halliburton will bring it to you, right?
That's right. Halliburton delivers it, and we pay Halliburton. And Halliburton, by the way, takes a profit from us on that oil that they
use. Oh, yeah, that's minimum 15% profit. That's on all contracts that go out, and also on the GI's mills there. Gouging us on. But you know what I would like to know, Tom? I would like to see somebody put a study on, find out what the oil companies are paying for the oil, because when they're making $11 billion a quarter profit, you know, they have to be gouging the public. And I've called our sleazy senator's office, Santorum from Pennsylvania, one of the worst in the country, and you get no response. As a matter of fact, sometimes you get hung up on. But if they would take the quarter that they're making his profit in and see what they pay for gasoline, then we could use the executive power of the president to put the OPA, Office of Price Administration, back into effect and tell them to quit gouging.
Yeah, it's time to come back to a windfall profits tax.
Well, I've been on that price gouging since it went into effect, because of when 9/11 happened, as you know, Tenet is coming out now, and he says he said what the president wanted to hear. Getting back onto that, I recall seeing, definitely on the Internet, that there were people told to stay home from the World Trade Centers. And another thing, in my opinion, it was before 9 o'clock that, the planes flew into the buildings. So, you know, it makes you seem kind of funny, especially when on the Internet, too, they come out and said that Cheney was meeting with Bin Laden up to April of that year.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It is filled with contradictions and weirdnesses, and, you know, Bush saying that, he saw the airplane fly in when there was no video of it, and, you know, it just goes on and on and on. It all gets stranger
and
stranger.
One other thing I would like to you put a watch on for.
Sure.
Is Senator Santorum, can you find him anywhere? Because last I saw him about a week ago, he was still selling books.
Yeah, he's mostly doing TV these days. He's out there trying
selling books. Yeah.
Trying to run for president. Yep.
Yeah, family. What is it?
Yeah, it takes family. He ripped off Hillary Clinton's title, and he's trying to be cute about it.
Well, then he supported Congressman Sherwood from Eastern Pennsylvania, who beat up that Peruvian woman he was staying with for 5 years, and he's married.
I'm waiting for the story to come out about Joe Scarborough's the woman that was found dead in his apartment. But that's,
that's a whole other
thing.
And there's another one. If you get any wind of this, can you let the public know? Our congresswoman from Western Pennsylvania was appointed to oversee DeLay at committee. To study Tom DeLay.
Right.
Is she doing anything? Because we don't see her in Western Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
You know what? Bush is not going to have to give any pardons, because no one will ever go to court.
There you go. Good rhetorical question,
okay,
Jim.
Thank you for your time.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you for the call. And of course, you can call your representatives toll-free. Toll-free. This is not a published number, but, hey, I'll give it to you. It's the old Senate office building toll-free number for people to call into, and now it goes directly to the switchboard in Congress, and you simply ask for your member of Congress or your senator, or the White House, the president's office, vice president's office, SOB, the letter U, SOB. SOB as in Senate Office Building. 1-877-SOB-USOB is the phone number for members of Congress. And here is that clip of George W. Bush talking about seeing that first plane that has a lot of people scratching their heads. Because you keep in mind, the first plane that hit the World Trade Center, we never saw the video of that until a day or so later. It was the second plane that everybody saw the video of because, you know, there were no cameras pointing at the World Trade Center when the first plane hit. Actually, I see I don't have enough time to play the whole clip, so we'll come back to it after the break. But there's Bush saying, well, yeah, I saw that thing. And how? Well, you've got the conspiracy folks who are saying, well, you know, he knew it was going to happen and he had video monitors there. I think it's just that he's a pathological liar, that, you know, given an opportunity to lie, he'll do it. As we saw yesterday in his speech, oh, why are we in Iraq? Well, it has to do with 9/11, you see, and World War II. It has to do with World War II. You got to understand, you know, Saddam and Hitler, they were good friends. You know, yeah, so that's what it is. That's what it is. He's trying to resurrect Hitler. All right. World War II. 9/11. World War II. I'm sorry, the American people are smarter than that, George. We're just smarter than that. It's 10 minutes before the hour. I'm Tom Hartman.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Nice and running to and fro, hard working at the mill, never fail in the mail yet and come a rotten bill. Oh, too much monkey business. Too much monkey business.
Yes, George, too much monkey business. Here it is, George W. Bush saying that he saw the first plane hit the towers when, in fact, there were no cameras videoing that. Or actually, there was a tourist camera, but it wasn't until a day later that tourist made his videotape available to the networks. So none of us, nobody saw the first plane hit the towers, at least until the day after, and then it was poor quality video. But somehow that fact escaped George.
Well, George, you're not going to believe what state I was in when I heard about the terrorist attack. I was in Florida. And my chief of staff, Andy Card, well, actually, I was in a classroom talking about a reading program that works. And I was sitting outside the classroom waiting to go in, and I saw an airplane hit the tower the TV was obviously on, and I used to fly myself, and I said, well, there's one terrible pilot. And it said it must have been a horrible accident. But I was whisked off there. I didn't have much time to think about it. I was sitting in the classroom, and Andy Card, my chief of staff, was sitting over here, walked in and said, a second plane has hit the tower. America's under attack.
Well, now we find out that, you know, not only did he not see the video of it, but there was no TV on in that school, according to the administrators of the school. So, you know, as I said, I it's just Bush's first instinct to make things up. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Josh in New Hyde Park, New York, on the line. Hey, Josh, what's up?
Hey, glad you mentioned that thing just now, because I've heard about that, and it sure is highly suspicious. But have you come across the book Big Bush Lies before?
Not that I don't think so.
Yeah, I just bought it yesterday. It came out in 2004, edited by...
You're not talking about David Korn's book?
No, this is Big Bush Lies.
Oh, okay, no.
Jerry Barrett.
No, I haven't seen it.
It's 20 essays... And the reason I find it so important is because you talk about winning the war at the water cooler. As my colleagues will tell me, oh, Bush never actually lied. If you can find evidence of him lying. So I went and got this book just to show them, look, here it is. Really, they condense it very well. It's very readable and digestible for people who aren't necessarily intellectuals. And I just wish people like us on the left would have a better focus when it comes to talking to these people and showing them the evidence.
Yeah, Big Bush Lies. Huh? Big Bush Lies. I'll have to check it out.
Great.
Thank you very much, Josh. I appreciate it. Interesting. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's David Korn wrote a book about I think it's called The Lies of George W. Bush. Came out a year and a half ago. It's not like there's any shortage of good documentation. Just Google Bush Lies on the web, and you'll find great piles of them.
He is. No, you know, I just don't spend that much time on him, really, to be honest with you.
Yeah, we don't know where he is. And what about that leaker?
And I don't know. We're going to find out. The senior administration official Now, this is a large administration.
Yeah.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
And there's a lot of senior officials.
Covers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. 7 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Yes, would you like a stormtrooper with that latte there in the bookstore? Ms. Schaefer?
I beg your pardon?
This by Matthew Rothschild in The Progressive. On the evening of August 10th, Hannah Schaefer of Glen Mills, Pennsylvania, decided to go to the nearby Barnes & Noble outside of Wilmington. She wanted to see Pennsylvania Senator Rick Santorum, who is promoting his book, It Takes a Family. The event was billed as a book signing and discussion, Schaefer says. But discussion really wasn't at the top of Mr. Santorum's agenda. In fact, he doesn't even really like discussions. Schaefer, who is 18 years old, a voter, she thought Santorum's public appearance might be a good occasion to ask him a few questions. She said, after all, he's my senator. She showed up at 6 o'clock. Along with a couple of other, couple of friends of hers, and two other young women that she didn't know, Stacey Galpern and Miriam Rosek. And as she's standing with her friends, one of these two women that she didn't know, Miriam Rosek, makes a joke. Rosek holds up a book by a gay writer, Dan Savage, called The Kid, about how he and his gay partner adopted a son, and says, "It would be funny if we got Santorum to sign this book." You know, because Santorum's the guy who said that gay marriage is the same thing as bestiality. Apparently he hadn't talked to Neil Horsley, who could tell him that there's a difference. In any case, a woman nearby, Galperin says, a woman nearby snapped, "He's only here to sign his own book. He won't sign that. You're shameful and disgusting." Well, the women didn't take the bait. They just, you know, okay, sorry. They thought that was the end of it. Yeah, good luck. A state trooper in full uniform, including hat and gun, was in the store. According to Schaefer and Galperin, he met with the lady who didn't care for the Dan Savage joke. Galperin says she heard the trooper ask, "Do you want me to get rid of them?" And then the trooper, Delaware State Police Sergeant Mark Di Giacomo, I'm assuming that's how it's pronounced, D-I-capital-J-I-A-C-O-M-O, who was on detail as a private security guard, came over to the group of women. Here's the conversation as Galperin remembers it. "You guys have to leave," says the state cop. "Why?" "Your business is not wanted here. They don't want you here anymore. If you don't leave, you're going to be arrested. If you can't post bail, you'll go to prison. Those of you who are under 18 will go to Ferris, the juvenile detention center. Those of you over 18 will either go to Gander Hill Prison or the women's correctional facilities. Any questions?" They just wanted to talk to Senator Santorum. They weren't even with the woman who made the tasteless joke. Schaefer remembers the conversation basically the same way. She says, "I said, sir, we're not doing anything wrong. We're sitting in a bookstore. On what grounds would we be arrested?" He said, "This is private property. Are you going to leave on your own or are you going to leave in cuffs?" Welcome, my friends, to George Bush's America. To the land of the enslaved and the home of the terrified. The country Rick Santorum would have us have. Galperin and Rochek decided to stay. That's it, he told him, according to Galperin. You're under arrest. Give me your ID. You're going to prison. Sergeant Di Giacomo led the two out to his police car. You're going to embarrass your families, he told them, she recalls. Your names are going to be all over the paper. He told Rochek to put her hands on the squad car and then told both of them to call their parents and to tell them, bring at least $1,000 in bail money, Galperin says. Does this sound like a shakedown? Call your parents and bring $1,000? Galperin calls her father, who, by the way, is a lawyer. I told my dad, I'm under arrest for expressing dissenting opinions. Her father asked to speak to the sergeant. The sergeant told her, your dad says get out of here, he'll meet you at home. And so they both left. By this time, Hannah Schaefer managed to reach her mother on the phone, who was planning on going to the event anyway. She came and said, whoever wants to return to the bookstore should come with you and with her, and we will talk respectfully to the police officer and to Barnes & Noble about why they kicked us out and threatened to arrest us, Schaefer said. Six or seven of the braver kids got in the car. We drove back over to the parking lot of Barnes & Noble. We were standing outside in the parking lot, and my mother went into the store. Just as she entered, the officer came out, and he saw us, and he drove over in his car very fast. Here's her account. You're under arrest. Get into the car. But my mom took us over here and wants to speak to you. Do I look like your mother? You're not wanted here. You had your chance. You showed up again. Now you're under arrest. Schaefer says he then asked the ages of everyone in the group, and he used this information to further threaten her. Not only will you be arrested for trespassing, but I've got you on the counts of contributing to the delinquency of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 minors, he said. According to Schaefer. Those are serious charges. Is that something you really want on your record? Is that something that'll make your parents proud? And he warned them, she says, that they would be arrested if they ever showed up at the bookstore or the mall again. At that point, he let Schaefer and the other young women leave. I was pretty upset, Schaefer says. So was her mother. Heidi Schaefer. The mother says, these are the cream of the crop, the outgoing student class presidents, students who had given hundreds of hours of community service, kids who wouldn't know how to cause trouble in a public place, much less their own basements. This is unconscionable. So Heidi Schaefer, the mother, approached Sergeant Di Giacomo. She says, I actually tried to talk humanely to the policeman. He told me if I took any of the underage kids in, I would be charged with contributing to the delinquency of a minor. One of the girls came home and was hysterical for about 2 days, she said. Some are even afraid to tell their parents that this hired gun can do whatever, can say whatever he wants and terrorize these kids is very, very scary. Well, Mrs. Schaefer, welcome to the conservative America. Welcome to the new America.
Well, a shut-up line has happened only once in 6 years.
Well, I know what
I'm
doing.
Shut up about sex.
What?
Listen, cut his mic.
No,
hey, shut up.
No,
you had your 35 minutes. Shut up.
And it is our duty as loyal Americans
to shut up and shut up publicly. We expect every American to support our military, and if they can't do that, to shut up. Okay. So you keep your mouth shut.
In a democracy, you don't have to shut up. Speak up.
Yeah, well, so, they tried. I'm sharing this with you, by the way. This is, as I mentioned at the beginning, this is by Matthew Rothschild in the current issue of The Progressive, online, August 20th, 2005, progressive.org. One of the advertisers to this program, by the way. So, Matthew Rothschild, the reporter, so, you know, he's going to get to the bottom of this. He calls up Sergeant Di Giacomo. No returned calls. Lieutenant Joseph Aviola, Director of Public Affairs for the Delaware State Police. He says, from all indications that we have, he handled his duties and responsibilities appropriately. Aviola says it's not uncommon for Delaware State troopers in their official capacity to work for private contractors who later reimburse the state. What did Senator Santorum think about this little exercise, this little lesson in American Republican democracy that these young women experienced? No comment. In fact, he told the author, Matthew Rothschild, wrote the reporter, Santorum's communication director, Robert Trainum, told Rothschild that he should contact Shirley and Bannister in Virginia. This is a PR firm. He called the PR firm. They didn't return his call. He called again. They didn't return his call. He called again. They didn't return his call. So he calls Barnes & Noble and asks for a store manager, and someone named Pam comes on the line and says, no comment. What's your last name? She hangs up. So he calls Barnes & Noble's headquarters, Mary Ellen Keaton, senior vice president for corporate communications and public affairs. She says, I spoke to the assistant manager, and what she told me was that the store management was not consulted on how the situation was managed. A state policeman, without consulting management, removed these students from the stores. Which is, by the way, apparently true. Barnes & Noble is not the villain in this. The executive director of the Delaware ACLU suggests we put this thing in context. He says, Drew Fennell, he says, this is trickle down from Bush. Politicians are now keeping away, out of sight, anybody who disagrees with them. If the senator's staff, if the senator's staff was so put off by the idea, he might be asked a difficult question that they brought in the police. That's a sad commentary on the state of political discourse. Yes. Fennell, the executive director of the Delaware ACLU, is also particularly concerned about the participation of the Delaware State Trooper. That, he says, puts a different and far more disturbing face on this. Frankly, it's a great deal more intimidating to be asked to leave by an armed police officer threatening you with arrest than if a store manager does it. Drew Fennell suggests that Sergeant Di Giacomo truly overstepped the bounds in threatening the young women. What's going to come out of this? We don't know. We'll find out. But I would suggest, for those of you listening to me in Pennsylvania, that you might want to dial 1-877-SOB-USOB, the toll-free number for Congress. Won't cost you a penny. 1-877-SOB, the letter U, S-O-B, and ask for Senator Santorum's office. And just ask Senator Santorum, why are you having people arrested for showing up at your book signings who you think might ask you a hard question? What are you afraid of, Senator Santorum? Why are you doing the same thing George Bush is doing with his free speech zones, so-called? Stifling dissent, refusing to talk to we the people. You're not our leader, you're our representative. We voted you for you to, we elected you to represent us. Please do so. Please do so. And explain your actions, sir. You work for us. Why the state cop chasing teenage girls out of a bookstore who simply wanted to ask you a question? 1-877-SOB-USOB, the toll-free number for Senator Rick Santorum's office. Give him a call. And then give us a call. Let us know what you heard. 1-866-889-8894. 20 minutes past the hour.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
I had a dream the other night. Now in my dream, our national bird had become the ostrich.
Let's take our heads out of the sand and open up our eyes. Let's take our heads out of the sand and finally realize that our tomorrow's will depend. On a horse that's going the wrong way. You don't stay the course on a horse that's going the wrong way.
Wise advice there. Somebody ought to tell George W. You don't stay the course on a horse that's going the wrong way. You don't. By the way, Just a bit of a, you know, one of those little factoids. There, those of you who listen on the web stream or on CRN Digital and on some of the stations that carry our newscast, you've heard this ad. Most of our affiliate stations, though, I think generally insert, you know, network news or their own news at the top of the hour, so you may not have heard it. So I'm going to play it right now. This is an ad from beawitness.org, the website beawitness.org. And on the, it's a TV ad. You can actually see the TV on the screen. And on this TV ad, they show the faces of the newscasters, and then they, and then when you hear the explosions, what they're showing is pictures of helicopters being blown out of the sky and pictures of people starving on the ground in Darfur. This is all about Darfur. Okay, here's the ad from beawitness.org. And this is...
While they show us this...
Michael Jackson's lawyers rested their case...
This...
...filed criminal charges against the so-called...
The runaway bride after faking her own...
And abundance. This...
But some are wondering if the engagement of Tom Cruise...
...with actress Katie Holmes...
This is happening. You can't stop a genocide if you don't know about it. Genocide is news. Tell the media to be a witness.
And then it has beawitness.org as the splash screen. And this breaking story, NBC, CBS, and ABC, all three of them, three Washington, D.C. television affiliates, NBC Channel 4, CBS Channel 9, and ABC Channel 7, refuse to run the ad. Even if you pay for it, they won't run the ad. In all of 2004, ABC broadcast 18 minutes of total Darfur coverage. In all of 2004. NBC, 5 minutes. CBS, 3 minutes. About a minute of coverage for every 100,000 deaths. Now, say the folks at beawitness.org, they won't let us pay for 30 seconds to urge better coverage of the genocide. Ain't going to happen. No siree, Bob. Brian in Greenville, Michigan on the line. Hey, Brian, what's on your mind today?
I'm good to talk to you again. Got a little good news here in Greenville. God knows we need it. Up the road here from my house, there's a local petroleum company, Peterson Oil and Propane, and they're putting in a renewable resource fuel center.
That's great. They're doing that here in Portland, Oregon, too. There's several of them now where you can buy ethanol or you can buy 95% pure vegetable oil, you know, for diesel.
Yeah,
biodiesel.
Yep. They're offering four fuel options here. One's an 80% diesel, 20% soybean blend, which I guess is biodiesel. I don't know that much about it.
Yeah, that's something that you can just put in a regular unmodified diesel engine.
Right. Yep. They're also doing a 95% diesel, 5% soybean. Then they're also doing 90% gas, 10% ethanol. And then they're doing a more rare 85% ethanol, 15% gasoline called E85.
Yeah.
And this is the only flexible fuel vehicles can operate on those. But just great news.
That's
great.
Excellent. Yeah, it's a beginning. I mean, this is the beginning. And as oil prices approach $100 a barrel, and then, you know, probably within the next 5-6 years, as they approach $200 a barrel, these kinds of fuel options are going to become very, 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 very viable.
Yeah.
Brian, thanks a lot for the call and for the update on what's going on there in Greenville, Michigan, of all places. So, you know, it's great. It's wonderful. Step by step. See, there's good news. There's bad news. There's all kinds of news. What it's all pointing to is change is in the air, my friends, and now is the time to get involved with it, to get politically active, to participate in this great democracy of ours. You know, find a candidate. Show up. Go to democracyforamerica.com and find out where there's a meeting near you. Check it out. 29 minutes past the hour.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, 27 minutes before the hour, or 33 past, as you may choose. Closing three loopholes in national fuel economy standards can reduce U.S. oil dependence by nearly 1 million barrels per day and save consumers $14 billion per year. Three loopholes. This from the Union of Concerned Scientists. I'll come back to that in just a minute. Share with you what those loopholes will be. First, 1-866-889-8894, a telephone number. Dave in Eureka, California on the line. Hey, Dave, what's up?
Oh, Tom, several of us have a great deal of difficulty with the official account of the events of 9/11, and you've just touched upon one of them. And
are you talking about the clip I played of in the last hour of Bush saying that he watched the first plane hit the World Trade Center?
Yes. Now, I understand that wherever the presidential crew is away, they have with them portable TVs and sophisticated reception units. It was his own people that brought the TV to him and showed it to him. It was not the school TV. But that poses all kinds of problems. This is 30-some hours before the rest of the country is going to see any film. So
right, that's why, you know, Occam's razor, Dave. I mean, you know, what's the most simple explanation for this? Is it that there was a giant conspiracy involved and Bush actually wanted to be able to watch the plane hit the tower that he had ordered to have happen, the first plane into the first tower? Or is it that Bush is simply a pathological liar and he just makes stuff up whenever he feels like it?
I think he should have lied about this one, but he didn't. He said what he saw. He saw it on the TV. That does raise the question. Did the White House not have indeed prior knowledge? How would they know to have somebody there to be filming the World Trade Center at that time with the ability to relay it to the away team?
Yeah, okay. Just for our listeners who are just tuning in now, here's the clip we're talking about. Hey, keep in mind, as Dave pointed out, the first we all saw on TV on 9/11, the second plane hit the second tower. Because after the first plane hit the first tower, every news camera in New York City was trained on the World Trade Center. But there were no cameras pointed at the World Trade Center when the first plane hit the first tower, other than a few tourist videos, and those didn't show up until a day and a half later. And so, you know, the video of the first tower being hit, nobody saw until 9/12 or 9/13. But here's George W. Bush.
Well, Jordan, you're not going to believe what state I was in when I heard about the terrorist attack. I was in Florida. And my chief of staff, Andy Card, well, actually, I was in a classroom talking about a reading program that works. And I was sitting outside the classroom waiting to go in, and I saw an airplane hit the tower the TV was obviously on, and I used to fly myself, and I said, well, there's one terrible pilot. And I said, it must have been a horrible accident. And I was whisked off there. I didn't have much time to think about it. I was sitting in the classroom, and Andy Card, my chief of staff, was sitting over here, walked in and said, a second plane has hit the tower. America's under attack.
So yeah. There you go. See, I don't believe that he's telling the truth. I think he's just, you know, as so often has happened, and there's no shortage of documentation of this, Dave, the stuff that has nothing to do with 9/11, Bush just lies, you know, he just tells whatever story he wants, you know, out of the top of his hat to satisfy him at the moment, because he's had a whole lifetime of this. I mean, you know, hiring people to do his tests when he's at Harvard and Yale. I mean, this is the story of his life. He just gets away with whatever he wants.
I agree. He lies about damn near everything. But that right there, I think he did see it. That his own people brought the TV over to him and, in effect, said, it's on schedule.
Yeah. Well, you have a darker view of Mr. Bush and his administration than I do, and my view is pretty dark.
But, yes, I know it is.
But
we'll
have to agree to disagree on this one, Dave. But you know, it's interesting to have the conversation. Thank you for calling.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number. Logan in New York City. Hey, Logan, what's up?
Yeah, just quickly on the Bush thing. Bush would have been in the classroom when the plane hit, so that would mean all the kids would have watched it too.
But, no, the second plane. He was in the classroom when the second plane hit. When the first plane hit, he was not yet in the classroom when the first plane hit. But at that point, everybody believed that it was a horrible accident, as he said. I mean, the news media was, you know, how did this happen? I was in New York City. I don't know what 8-10 years ago when an Argentinian plane nearly hit the World Trade Center. I mean, it was, you know, Aerolíneas Argentina or whatever it is. It missed it by like, you know, 300 feet or something. I mean, it was a huge news story. that, you know, that almost took out the World Trade Center. I'm sure everybody in New York was remembering that and thinking, oh, gee, you know, maybe this is. And then there was a small plane that hit the Empire State Building, I think, at one point, didn't it? You know, like 10, 15 yeah. years ago, something like that.
But anyway, so, that's not why I called. I wanted to ask you two questions, and I'll just get off. First, why are oil prices, why have they shot up? And second of all, is there some kind of system in place to check whether the 2006 election will be legitimate or not? Is there a group monitoring it? Or is nobody really on that?
In answer to your question, okay, sure enough, Logan, thanks for the call. In answer to your question number two, to the best of my knowledge, no, nobody's monitoring. Nobody has a clue. And, you know, I wrote an op-ed piece a half a year ago, for CommonDreams.org, suggesting to the Democratic Party, if you guys want to have any credibility at all, any ability to believe that, you know, your the actual election is the actual election, that, you know, whoever claims that they won actually won, then you better get together, because corporate America is apparently not going to do it, you better get together some exit polls. And to the best of my knowledge, nobody's working on that. And I think that one of the best investments the Democratic Party could make right now would be to toss $30-40 million or whatever it costs, and I understand it's quite costly, to John Zogby. And say, Mr. Zogby, we'd like you to put together some exit polls. Now, as to the question about why is the price of oil going up, there are two variables that are converging at the same time. The smaller variable that everybody thinks is the big variable, but it's really the smaller one, is that oil is becoming more scarce. Oil is a fossil fuel. Literally, they're fossils. They're 400 million years old. Oil is 300 to 400 million years old. It's from the Carboniferous period. It was, you know, plant material back then, and mostly mats in the ocean back before there were even trees. I mean, the most advanced plants on the land were giant ferns, you know, 200 foot tall ferns, but they were, I mean, that was it. The more advanced, I mean, this was before the dinosaurs. The dinosaurs were 90 million years ago. This was 300 million years ago. And these giant mats of sea vegetation is sunk to the bottom of the earth and or the ocean, and they got compressed. And, you know, there's an argument about whether it was pressure and temperature that converted them to oil, or whether there was what's called hyperthermophilic bacteria that live in very hot places that converted them to oil. This fellow by the name of Gold actually has a hypothesis that it was bacteria. And the presence of hydrogen in the, or maybe it's helium, one or the other, in the oil is an indicator that there is actually bacterial action there. And, you know, but in either case, it took 300-400 million years to make. So it's a depleting resource. It's a resource that's slowly vanishing, or rapidly vanishing, actually. We have used up pretty much about half of the world's oil. We used up half of the United States' oil as of 1974. It's called the Hubbert Peak, the halfway point. So we're crossing that halfway point. When that happens, oil is going to start getting more scarce. And, of course, you know, the good old-fashioned supply and demand principle, supply goes down, demand goes up. But when supply goes down in any kind of measurable way, you're going to see shortages emerging, and shortages are not appearing. So what is really driving this? So the supply and demand thing, that's the small part of the equation that everybody thinks is the answer. Sorry, that's the smallest part of the answer. That accounts for maybe 10% or 20% of why the price of oil is going up. The real reason why the price of oil is going up is that the price of oil is not going up. The price of oil has not increased. The price of oil is pretty much where it was in the 1980s. What has happened is that the value of the dollar has gone down. When George Bush came into office, you could buy an ounce of gold for about $250. Now it's $450. When George Bush came into office, the value of the dollar relative to the euro, relative to the yen, relative to most other foreign currencies was not quite twice, but significantly higher than it is right now. What has happened is that 6 years now, 5 years now, of insane conservative economic policies, doing a 180, going exactly the opposite direction that Bill Clinton had been taking this country economically, domestic economic policy. Bill Clinton had a rational domestic economic policy. Balance budgets, generate a surplus, pay down the deficit, pay down the debt. George Bush said, what? If Bill Clinton did it, it must be wrong. Let's go back to Reagan and run this country into bankruptcy, borrow all the money we can, spend like a drunken sailor, and that's what he did. And he has bankrupted our country. And because we're not on the gold standard anymore and haven't been since Nixon took us off the gold standard back in the 1970s, 72 as I recall, because we're not on the gold standard anymore, the value of our currency is determined solely by the perception of the fiscal wealth or health of this country by people outside this country. As long as people believe in the dollar, they'll continue to buy it, they'll continue to invest in it, they'll continue to use it for things. When they don't believe in the dollar, they won't give you as many dollars for whatever it is they're getting. And because oil around the world in, you know, 95 probably percent, I don't know the exact percentage, but the vast majority of oil in the world is denominated in dollars. Dollars are the universal currency used for oil. It is absolutely natural that if the value of the dollar, if the real value of the dollar decreases by half during the 5 years Bush has been president, that the price of oil is going to double. Well, it was around $20 a barrel when he comes into office. I'd take it up to 40. And then, you know, you toss in the fact that oil is becoming more and more of a rare commodity. That gooses it up to 60. So those are the two things that are accounting for it. And neither one of those is going to be fixed anytime soon. The fact that oil is growing scarce, it's going to get worse and worse. And the fact that the dollar is worth less and less, and someday may be worth less or worthless, is the exact, obvious, understandable, explainable, just absolute consequence of the kind of economic policy that George W. Bush and his loony friends in Washington, D.C. have been following, the Republicans. And the DLC Democrats, the conservative Democrats. It is an insane economic policy. Grover Norquist, and he's starved the beast. Oh, I don't want to destroy government. I just want to, you know, shrink it down to the size where I can drag it into the bathroom and drown it in the bathtub. Yeah, right. Why do that? Well, because then corporations can come in and take over the commons. This is why Venezuela is such a threat. Venezuela is such a threat because they consider oil to be part of the commons. You can't have that. You can't have oil as part of the commons. Not if you're an oil administration. Not if you're an oil man as president and an oil man as vice president. You can't have anybody talking about oil being part of the... What? Oil belongs to the people simply because it's underneath the soil that the people live on? That the oil that the country has is a resource of the country, that it should be used to pay for subsidized food and housing and medical care? That's communism. You can't have that. As Pat Robertson reminds us.
And as a result, within about 48 hours, that coup was broken. Chavez was back in power, but we had a chance to move in. He has destroyed the Venezuelan economy, and he's going to make that a launching pad for communist infiltration and Muslim extremism all over the continent.
Now, first of all, he hasn't destroyed the Venezuelan economy. He's doing very well, thank you very much. Although the very wealthy families and the oil companies are hurting because they've had their oil taken away. It's been nationalized. And, you know, you can call that communism if you want. It's not. It's called nationalizing your oil. Some people would call it representative democracy if it's what the majority of the people want. But, and then to say this is going to be a launching pad for radical Islam? Wait a minute. This is a Catholic country. I've been in Venezuela. It's a Catholic. In fact, I was there the last time there was a coup attempt. Not the most recent last time. It's like 15 years ago I was there. Just by coincidence, the very week that the generals tried to take over. It's one of those very short-lived coups. And come on. The people of Venezuela rather like it that way. They voted for this guy. He's democratically elected multiple times.
You know, I don't know about this doctrine of assassination, but if he thinks we're trying to assassinate him, I think we really ought to go ahead and do it. It's a whole lot cheaper than starting a war. And I don't think any oil shipments will stop, but this man is a terrific danger. The United States, this is in our sphere of influence, and we can't let this happen. We have the Monroe Doctrine. We have other doctrines that we have announced. And without question, this is a dangerous enemy to our South, controlling a huge pool of oil that could hurt us very badly. We have the ability to take him out, and I think the time has come that we exercise that ability. We don't need another $200 billion war to get rid of one, you know, strong-arm dictator. It's a whole lot easier to have some of the covert operatives do the job and then get it over with.
There you go. And Gary in Pittsburgh just vanished. Yep. I thought we had a caller there that was going to share with us some experience from Santorum's office, but you can tell me what happened, Scott, after the after we get off. Josh in Atlanta on the line. Hey, Josh, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I just called yesterday, but I had a point about the vote in 2006.
Sure.
Have a little idea. Let me know what you think. A little sneak attack on those who want the 2006 election to be decided by corruptible voting machines. Why don't we start, those of us that like talk radio, like to call into shows, let's just start calling Rush Limbaugh's show and slyly convince his Republican listeners to urge for legislation for clean, untampered voting procedures.
Well, here's what you do. First of all, getting through the screeners there is a real challenge. I mean, we don't screen calls here beyond, you know, what's your name and your topic. But
I have an idea.
But here's what you do. Well, tell me what you think of this. Tell them that Howard Dean hacked a voting machine on national TV, and they got to watch out. He's the head of the Democrats.
Yes, and also tell them that you find it funny that Democrats blame their election loss in 2004 on voter fraud, when it's been proven that the Democratic Party has been, you know, rampant election fraud, guilty of it.
Yeah, that's why they keep winning elections, don't you know?
That one's
not going to fly, Josh, but the whole thing about Howard Dean hacking a voting machine on Topic A with Tina Brown, that's real. I got the audio of it. So, anyhow, it's an idea. 10 minutes before the hour.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
And I'm taking my country back. Son, you ain't been doing her right. Oh, I've been watching you and I don't like how you've been treating my stars and stripes. You took our jobs and sent them overseas. Now we owe billions to the red Chinese.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you 5 minutes before the hour. And Scott Forrester is with us. He's our engineer in our program today, and he just tracked down the CIA fact book about Venezuela. I understand Pat Robertson says it's a communist dictatorship. Scott, what does the CIA say?
Well, the CIA, Tom, in their fact book, which is at CIA.gov, says it's a federal republic. So I went to the definition section, and if I might read it, it's a sentence.
Hmm?
It says a federal republic is a state in which the powers of the central government are restricted and in which the component parts, states, colonies, and provinces, retain a degree of self-government. Ultimate sovereign power rests with the voters who choose their governmental representatives, unquote.
Yeah, there you go.
I guess that's not a communist.
I guess not. Thank you, Scott. Appreciate it. Scott Forrester with us. So the CIA fact book, there you go. Now, Pat Robertson, it's communists. Kill them. Kill him! Assassinate him! Of course, on his website, it's a little different. Pat Robertson's website. This is kind of this is patrobertson.com/teaching/shallnotmurder.asp. God Almighty wants to protect life and have everyone walk the streets without fear of being murdered. Unless you're Hugo Chavez! Life has become more and more cheap in the society we live in, but God says you shall not murder. Unless you're going after a guy who says that the nation's oil belongs to the poor people as well as the rich people. From patrobertson.com, the moral foundations that taught us to value life are crumbling under our feet. I would say so, Pat. I mean, here you are. Coming off with this stuff, and it's just a little spooky.
I don't know about this doctrine of assassination, but if he thinks we're trying to assassinate him, I think we really ought to go ahead and do it. It's a whole lot cheaper than starting a war.
Yeah, well, somebody should have told George that about Saddam. I mean, Saddam, frankly, I'm not in favor of assassinating anybody. And here's the reason why. Because over time, it doesn't work. You end up making martyrs. You end up destabilizing countries. You let the democratic process work. That's why there's more than 100 democracies in the world right now. Virtually every one of them, a couple of notable exceptions we've talked about in this program, but the vast majority of them came about as movements from the bottom up. The peoples rising up and throwing off an oppression, like we did here in the United States. That's the way to make democracy happen, to support it and nurture it. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.